WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Suzanne Farrell was a star dancer with the New York City Ballet for more than 20 years. During that time, she became the inspiration for choreographer George Balanchine. The story of their extraordinary collaboration is the subject of the documentary Suzanne Farrell, Elusive Muse. Tomorrow evening it will air on many PBS stations as part of the Dance in America series. Our classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz, a longtime admirer of Farrell's, has a review.
I remember very well George and I talking, and I suppose he was being somewhat philosophical, or maybe just testing me and him. And he said, "You know, Suzanne, if I weren't a choreographer, you wouldn't look at me twice." And I looked at him, and I said, "You know, George, if I weren't a ballerina, you wouldn't look at me twice."
I think how you dance is who you are, and that's what he fell in love with.
Suzanne Farrell, Elusive Muse, tells two stories. One is the story of a great dancer. I think the greatest dancer I ever saw. We get to see home movies of the young Roberta Sue Ficker from Cincinnati falling on roller skates. She was already a risk taker. And as the teenager doing elegant pirouettes in a stage performance before she came to New York. We see clips of her in class with Balanchine and an amazing 1963 rehearsal for her first major role in Stravinsky's difficult Movements for Piano and Orchestra. "Who is that girl?" Stravinsky asked. "Igor," Balanchine answered, "this is Suzanne Farrell, just been born." Most extraordinary of all are several brief excerpts from the opening night of Balanchine's Don Quixote, with Balanchine himself dancing the title role. Farrell is astounding, poignant in gesture, breathtaking in her fearless off-balance spins, thrilling extensions, and mind-boggling sudden shifts of direction. Leaping, darting, floating, she's practically flying. Balanchine, on his knees before her beauty, is so loving and achingly vulnerable and real. As Farrell says, she was dancing her own life. And that's the other story, which takes over the film, the love story of the great dancer and her great mentor, 42 years her senior and married, but passionately in love with her. Farrell has already written about this in her autobiography, but it's even more remarkable to hear her telling this story so candidly.
One of the terrific things about Mr. Balanchine is he had no idea what was going to happen in the studio. He had in his mind the vision of what it would look like, but steps were unformed. He often would say, "I've never been on point. Is this possible?" And now he was starting to ask me to wobble and to fall off balance and recover and turn. And I'd say, "Well, it's not possible today, but it's not impossible. Let me work on it." That was the beginning of Mr. B and I really talking to each other, and not necessarily with words, but with our dancing, our bodies, and the steps that he asked me to do, and the answers that I would give back to him through the steps. So it was really the beginning of our getting our professional lives entwined and our private lives entwined, and working long days in the studio and then walking home after the end of the day and stopping off at Tiptoe Inn for something to eat. I suppose there were some problems in our relationship. He was married. He was 42 years older than I was. Not that that ever made a difference to me. Everything that mattered was all fine when we were working.
Farrell's mother didn't object to Balanchine's attentions.
The age difference didn't bother me. All the marriages didn't bother me. I thought that was okay. Because he wasn't just any old man. Mr. Balanchine was a genius. He was a living, working genius. And that's a big difference. I told her that if she couldn't marry Balanchine, it was okay, don't marry Balanchine. But don't get married at all. Stay single.
Farrell's solution was to marry the gifted young dancer Paul Mejia. But it was like the red shoes. Balanchine was jealous of Mejia and refused to let him dance. When Farrell protested, Balanchine canceled one of her major appearances at the last minute. In news that shocked the dance world, Farrell and Mejia left the New York City Ballet. Eventually, she returned. And many people think the years of separation deepened her art. But seeing the footage flash by of Farrell before she left the company, in the impassioned, flowing lyricism of Meditation, the very first ballet Balanchine created directly for her, or her teasing Terpsichore opposite Jacques d'Amboise's Apollo, her quicksilver solo in Scotch Symphony, her flamboyant, high-kicking striptease girl in Slaughter on 10th Avenue, and of course in Don Quixote. These remind me that long before her relationship with Balanchine caused so much anguish, she was already all there, a dancer whose dizzying virtuosity and variety were only the most obvious elements of her profound art.
Lloyd Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix.